following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
It is that time of the week. It is time for your favorite show on this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. I'm David Littlejohn. Joining me in studio today is
Matt Dixon.
And you got the True Wealth Show. Hey, we are stoked to be here. Today, we've got kind of a different sort of topic. And it's kind of, I don't think throw rocks is the right term, but I feel like it's throwing rocks. There's all of this talk about how AI is changing the world. And, you know, I got to thinking about this, Matt.
Yeah.
How many people you figure are now using AI to do things like investment research?
Probably a lot.
Right?
It's probably really common now.
Sure, sure.
And it probably wasn't just 6 to 8 months ago when this really wasn't that big of a thing.
It's amazing how it has exploded onto the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not, believe it or not, we're not here to vilify AI. But it's interesting because one of the things I have noticed, I don't know about you, Matt, is AI is learning from all of us as we continue to give it more input.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced it's always getting smarter.
I don't necessarily think that it is, because it's learning from us, right?
And maybe it's the same way, like you can learn rumors and things like that, and it's not necessarily the right information. Or, I don't know, it's not necessarily complete information.
Mm-hmm.
So what AI sometimes misses is maybe nuance and context.
Right.
Right? I mean, plus it depends on the input you give it is what it gives you back. So anyway, I was really interested in how, especially recently, right?
Yeah.
We've just seen a ton of volatility in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
How does AI think investors should handle this right now, and is it getting it right?
That's a really good question. And I think a lot of the times at the very beginning, it'll give you something super generic, right? Because that's just how it's programmed. Like, oh, just be a long-term investor, and that's kind of what it might say. But I know for myself today, I was trying to think about a radio show, and this thought came to me of like, how do you, as an investor, build a portfolio that's so robust that the market can slide 20% and you're not really feeling the effects of it? And so I took that to AI and said, like, how do you do that? You know, what would you recommend? And as I read through the answers, some of them I definitely agreed with, but some of them not quite as much. And so I think that there definitely is room for error inside of AI.
Yeah. So for everybody listening, let me give you just a little bit of insight into, like, when we do show prep, how do we decide what we're going to cover, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just something that's on our mind. We've had something come up in our practice, mm-hmm, or in our personal life where we go, you know what? This is really a topic that we should explore more.
I asked it to give me three of your favorite like radio show ideas for the day. And this was the one that I found to be the most interesting.
Mm-hmm. So that's another. Yeah, just, hey, sometimes we ask what's trending. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we kind of know what's trending and we ask it questions about
that
stuff.
We know that this is trending, right? The markets are beat up and everyone is talking about recession, like the R word, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, today, right?
Yeah.
That's the idea. And I don't know when you're listening to this show, right? Maybe it's not the case and you're like, no, things are great. But when we are recording the show today, markets are beat up, mm-hmm, right? And so we're getting the questions like, is there more to come? What's going to happen? So then you ask, you say, okay, well, what would you do to make, you use these goofy terms. I'm not crazy about them because it's kind of marketing language, but all right, so well, how would you build a bulletproof portfolio, mm-hmm, or something like that? It's sort of, you know, subjective marketing terms, but you know what we mean, right?
Right.
So why don't we talk a little bit about that? Like what did AI tell you today? And the game I'd love to play is, you know, what are the things that we agree with and what are the things that we maybe disagree with? when it comes to how AI is advising.
Yeah, one of the things that it talked about was when the markets are really moving lower, right? Not just like a little short-term trend, but like when you have multiple sustained weeks of the market moving lower, that it said, you know, like that traditional 60-40 split between 60% maybe being stocks and 40% being bonds. It said that that portfolio still gets hit pretty hard in a downturn. And I think we have seen that this time around, right? Like bonds suffered. And
do you have a sense of why?
Well, when the stocks, you know, are moving lower, sometimes the bond market will jump in and move lower too. Like they will actually be a little bit more highly correlated than what people tend to assume.
I think that's the magic here is, and I was fishing for that. So you nailed it. Good job.
Oh,
I was fishing because the concept of correlation, if you've been a longtime listener to any of our shows, I used to talk about this idea of mind your shuns, right? Diversification, allocation, and correlation. Correlation is the tricky one, right? Because diversification really only works if you have low correlation. Right? Because the whole point of diversification is like, don't put all your eggs in one basket. But if all of your eggs are kind of the same egg anyway. Mm-hmm. And I've used this example before, like Home Depot and Lowe's. They're really similar companies, right?
Yeah.
So much so that they usually camp next to each other. Like Home Depot goes in and Lowe's goes in or vice versa. They kind of do that. So if that's the case, then do you really have a diversified strategy?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I don't know that you do if you just buy Home Depot and Lowe's. Now, on paper, well, I got two stocks instead of one.
Right.
But there's so much overlap. They're so highly correlated that you're really not getting the diversification to do anything for you. Now, take that one step further. Over the last 10 or even 20 years, we have seen stocks and bonds start to exhibit more high correlation with each other. Mm-hmm. And so the 60-40 portfolio is arguably less diversified than it was maybe 20 years ago.
I mean, in an instance like this where you see people maybe selling stocks, if you're selling the stocks, you might also be trying to sell the bonds too, right? And so if you're liquidating on both ends of the spectrum, that can cause a disruption in both markets.
Yeah. Well, and regardless, and by the way, we are going to talk today a little bit about, I think, how you can sort of combat the issue of higher correlation across assets classes, right? But you just got to be aware that 60-40 portfolio doesn't do as, maybe it does less effectively than it used to,
right?
Or at least in this current market regime. Right, that's the other thing, is that not every market's created equal. Okay,
true.
All right, so first thing is it says the 60 portfolio, so AI tells us 60 portfolio, 40 split, maybe not ideal. So then what?
And then I think the next piece that I was talking about was sometimes it's not enough to just ride it out, right? Because people say, well, when the market's down, just weather that storm. But the question comes in, what if you have to start taking a bunch of money? Right? Like, what if you're super dependent and you're always drawing on your account?
Yeah.
If the market goes down and stays down for an extended period of time, that could really stress the portfolio.
Right.
So maybe part of building a more resilient portfolio is having something where you don't necessarily have to keep taking the money out.
Okay. So now this is fun, by the way. It really is layering in these elements of both financial planning and investment management and sort of the theory of how they cooperate with each other, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the first thing that comes to mind when you talk to me about this is risk tolerance.
That's
right?
Part of it. And I think the other part might be too is, you know, we mentioned taking the money out and some person might be sitting there thinking to themselves, well, I always have to take it out. And I would counter that with, well, maybe not, right? Like, what if you have a set of pensions and your Social Security and some other income streams where the money that's in your actual retirement accounts, maybe a Roth IRA or an IRA, maybe you don't actually have to pull the money out that year because you have enough income from the other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one thing for the investors to think about is having a lot of income streams.
Yeah, it's funny, we don't often talk about this, but an income stream in some respects is an asset class.
Right.
Right? Yeah. If you consider your total investment nest egg, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe you've got some retirement accounts, maybe you have some money that's invested in non-retirement, maybe you own some real estate. Mm-hmm. But a lot of folks don't even think of it this way, but Social Security, that's an income stream. Okay, if you're eligible, you've got this income stream. That does come into play for how your plan operates.
Yeah.
Right? And so if that income stream is able to sort of meet a lot of your income needs, and that, you know, Social Security oftentimes doesn't, but let's say you have a pension in addition to it. If that covers a lot of your monthly expenses, then what it does is it gives you more discretion over when you liquidate your nest egg.
And that can be a really big deal.
It can be a huge deal because that's buying you the time, right? I mean, the magic of investing, like why do we even bother having risk tolerance in an investment?
I think that kind of jumps into the next point, right?
Oh, did I skip ahead?
No, you actually, that's a perfect lead-in, and it's talking about like volatility, right? And how mm-hmm. it might be more dangerous depending on your situation in retirement having that volatility versus when you're accumulating, right? Because right. Do the polar opposites. To the person who's just starting out, they have $2,000 in their account and the market drops 20%. Mm-hmm. Did that crush that person, or are they just buying the market when it's way down?
Well, right? Because they have...
They have a longer time frame.
I have it's not crazy. It's just a recently different take on things.
Okay.
It's this idea that there are two different things that you could be tracking as an investor, right? One of them is the price, but the price is not always reflective of value, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you see the price of the stock market today, we're making some weird assumptions, right? Like one, we're assuming whatever the last trade was in a stock, that's the entire value of the company. Mm-hmm. Like, so whoever showed up and for whatever reason, like let's say they needed the money,
Right.
So they had to cash their stock in. And when they do, we now value the entire organization, all of the stock in existence at that last transaction price. Well, what about all the people that don't have to sell? Okay. So what you have is this liquidation value that's probably inaccurate because not everybody's going to come and try to sell at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's really not the value of liquidating the company. It's just the way we've agreed to put it on a board somewhere and declare the price, right? That's how you're going to calculate your statement value is based on that last trade. But then there's this other element, and this is like the Warren Buffett thing, right? Okay. What's the sentiment around the company?
Sentiment is huge because if everyone is real negative,
right, then the perception is it's not a valuable company.
If everyone's selling it, it changes the value of the entire company.
Right, and the idea is, what is the future value? Well, if the future sentiment improves, then the future value will be higher on paper. Mm-hmm. And really, the value you're concerned about most is the value when you sell it.
Right.
Which is like when the markets are down, it's most scary if you have a forced liquidation. Like I have to take the money and my stocks are down. That's a bummer, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. But what if you don't have to take the money? Then that's when everybody gets into the, well, buy and hold and long term. I mean, mm-hmm. those are all real things, but sometimes you have to like coach somebody out of their own head, if you will. Cause like, well, gosh, I see this thing and I'm sort of incentivized to panic and then have these bad behaviors. And those are the most harmful things.
Yeah, it's true. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we take a little break? And when we come back, let's dive a little bit deeper in what you just talked about, when to access, where it comes from.
I think
that's a big part of this. Where do you go and how do you do it?
All right, we'll do that. So a couple minutes for obscene profit break for our favorite radio station. And when we come back, we're gonna unpack some more of this. Stick around, we'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM. And 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right. right, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And remember, if you are just joining us right now, this is all going to be podcasted. So you can go to littlejohnfs.com and look under the Knowledge Center, and you can find all these. And so we got all the past shows and everything else, but you get caught up. Today, we're kind of talking about the markets have been pretty volatile lately. Yeah. And so we went out and asked AI, hey, what would you do? Because I think a lot of people are now considering that. And AI gave us some answers, but we don't agree with everything. And so we're talking about how the advisors maybe disagree with AI right now.
And I think segment one was decent, right? Like it brought up some good points. But
it did. Well, it's a lot of the fundamentals, right? Like those fundamentals are
but unchanged. Now we're moving into those the more core principles of things, right? We're getting into that more nitty gritty, like the idea of like different buckets, right? Like your short-term money versus long-term money. And I kind of want to get your take on like how you think about that, because I think the way that you know a lot of people view this is they've got maybe like this short-term bucket of money that they're pretty conservative with, and then they've got something that they're maybe a little bit more aggressive with. What's your take on all of that?
Okay, so this is a fun one. I probably am a little bit less kind to the bucket strategy.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Give me your theory.
Well, so my theory is that when it comes to financial planning, right, you have emergency funds or reserves, and those are intended to buy you time. In the event that something unexpected happens in life.
And so do you think those should, for the most part, generally tend to be like a little less risky?
Oh, those super less, right? Like there's no question.
So you agree with that part.
Yeah, that is the short-term bucket though,
right?
That's not an investment bucket. The short-term bucket is your emergency reserve, because that is what buys you the time to allow your investments to play out. So that you can ride through a volatile environment and you don't have forced liquidations.
Right.
My issue here is I think that, so the bucket strategy, now I'm 25 years into this business, right?
Right.
And what I remember the bucket strategy as was the idea of using different types of tax treatments. And there are different reasons to have different tax treatment, because you can pull from the different buckets to optimize your tax rate.
Right.
And that's a way to make your investments become more efficient when it's time to make distributions from them, or if you're doing estate planning and trying to transfer them to the next generation, right? And I still think that that's valid. But what's happened is we've also got folks that sort of do mental accounting, right? It's like the Dave Ramsey envelope system, which is great when you're talking about budgeting if you need forced discipline, right?
Yeah.
I put the money in an envelope. When the envelope is empty, there's no more in it, right? So it's a very mechanical restriction for how you budget. And that is, it's functional for folks that just really struggle and they need that very hard and fast system. But I think there's a lot of folks that don't operate that way too. Right. They don't need to have a force imposed restriction on themselves. They spend less than they make and they stay within budget because that's just their operating system works that way. Right.
Yeah.
But if you take that mental accounting into your investment strategy and you say, OK, well, I'm going to take one account or one investment. I'm going to do this, really aggressive strategy. And this other one's really conservative and this other one's moderate. I've seen people in their 401k, for example, have both an aggressive fund, a moderate fund, and a conservative, like strategies, three of them all at the same time.
But then it kind of almost blends, right?
Well, like, here's the basic theory, right? All the money sort of spends the same. The tax treatment is different, but like every dollar bill has the same purchasing power.
Right.
And my theory is all of the investments go in a bathtub, right?
Mm.
And if you have aggressive investments, think of them as like boiling hot.
Yeah.
And conservative investments, think of them like ice cubes. And if you mix them into a bathtub, what you end up with is
lukewarm.
The blended temperature of lukewarm, right?
Yeah.
So these buckets, they may help somebody emotionally, but I don't think that they really produce a superior outcome.
Mm.
And so I don't like it, because what people do is they say, well, it's okay that I own this risky, dumb investment that doesn't match my actual objective here, because I'm owning this other thing that's super conservative over there.
Mm.
Like, well, why are we doing it that way?
That is interesting, yeah. Okay, so maybe not a huge fan of this idea of the buckets.
Well, again, maybe somebody has a better way to view it, but I think that at the end of the day, all of your investments need to be coordinated working together. It's the same problem that you have if you say, like, I'm going to take money to brand X down the street and brand Y down this other street, and I'm going to have a horse race between them and say, well, if they're buying the same stuff, there's no tax efficiency because they're not coordinating their activities. And so that's always been one of those where I go, I get why you're doing it. You're trying to incentivize performance. But in your seeking performance, what if you inadvertently, through inefficiencies, rob yourself of any enhancements or any gains?
The one thing that it spit out that I don't necessarily agree with was it talked about using your Roth IRA as a shock absorber for when the markets are down, right?
And I'm like,
I don't like that, right? Because if I have some different areas where I can access funds, for me personally, that would kind of be the last place I would want to have to go pull the money from, right? Is from my Roth. Because if the Roth is growing and I don't have to pay taxes on the growth, like, I want that thing to just grow and grow and grow until I really need it one day, or I want to make a big purchase.
It doesn't really absorb the shock, right?
I mean,
that to me is... I mean, I'll just say it. Like, that's terrible advice.
Right. And because that's what it spit out.
I'm like,
I don't agree with this.
Yeah, you mean to tell me that because an account is tax-free, you're okay getting whipsawed around, and if the markets are beat up, you can still take the hit?
Right.
Like, that's dumb.
Exactly.
It doesn't make any sense.
Don't take all of your advice from the AI.
Or ask it a lot better questions. But I pity the person that if they asked the question in a simple way and it said, well, if the markets are down, take it from your Roth IRA. I'm like, man, you should have had a V8. That is not the right move.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you may still end up pulling from retirement plans, but I mean, arguably, if the markets are way down, you may be converting to Roth.
I just don't think that if I'm, you know, in that stage of retirement, I don't want to ever think of my Roth IRA as the shock absorber, right? So, like, that doesn't align with
Well, here's where it is, though. Oh. It's not a shock absorber for market volatility, in my opinion. Mm. It's a shock absorber for emergencies.
Or big expenses.
Yeah, where you have something where you're on a tax plan,
right,
meaning, hey, we take this much out of our retirement plans to sort of control our taxes, but we have an extraordinary event. The Roth is good because you can go there, pull it out, and not blow up your tax strategy.
Or if you knew that you were going to make a really big purchase and you planned around it, right? Maybe you're 50 years old and you're like, hey, I have this vacation house I want to buy. And you're piling money in the Roth and your Roth has done really well and it's grown to be a big account. Maybe you can pull the money from there instead of something like your IRA, where you generate a ton of taxes by pulling the money.
So, Kim, let's just do an aside on Roth for a second.
Yeah.
Why, in your opinion, is Roth like a good instrument?
I love it because I'll just compare it to a traditional IRA, right?
Okay.
Like, I put $100,000 in each one and say they both grow to $500,000.
Okay.
I've had $400,000 of growth in both.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea of being able to say at the drop of a hat in retirement age, I'm going to be able to pull $500,000 out and do whatever I want. It's freedom, right? To do whatever you wish with your money. Whereas if I go to the traditional IRA and do the same thing, now I have
you have $400,000 of deferred.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you have $500 because you got the break, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, unless it was an after-tax, but, you know, subject for another day.
So you just triggered a huge tax bill, and now you're going to give about, what, half of it roughly away in taxes? Roughly. And so maybe
30%, 40%. Yeah, depending on the state. It's a lot,
yeah. So it's like, well, I would rather have my money be growing tax-free than taxed, and I want to be able to have the freedom to spend my money however I want to spend it.
There's another feature to Roth as well, it's a fantastic estate tool because if you're going to die with money left over,
that's a huge piece.
It goes to the next generation and it's still tax free to them.
Yeah, like what if your kid is making a ton of money and then you give them a traditional IRA? And then they're taking the money out.
Yeah, and I realize everybody listening is like, well, if they're making a ton of money, but they don't need the inheritance. The point is not so much whether or not they need the inheritance. The point is that...
why give more to the government?
Right. Turning it over to the IRS and then saying, like, good luck, is not, in our opinion, like, I'm not saying don't pay your taxes.
But why give more than you need?
You don't need to pay more than your share, right? That's, like, pay what you're legally supposed to pay, but you don't need to voluntarily pay more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so the Roth is this really flexible tool, mm-hmm. And it's got a lot of neat planning features to it.
Right.
That's why I really like it. And I don't want to misrepresent this, like, to our listeners so that you think, oh, well, he's saying I should never spend out of my Roth. No, that's not what we're saying.
True.
We're saying the Roth is the most flexible spending you will have, because when it is qualified, like when it's fully qualified, so it's existed for more than 5 years and you're over the age of 59 and a half, those distributions from Roth become tax-free. Mm-hmm. And that is a really valuable planning resource, because you can get a chunk of money and not push yourself into the highest tax bracket.
Yeah.
Right? So at least the way the law works today, I mean, who knows? Maybe they blow it all up and the Roth is not cool someday. But right now, it's a really cool feature.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and especially for young folks, I'm always like, look, if you're in a low tax bracket today, you'll probably be in a higher tax bracket in the future. So Roth makes a ton of sense. Just kind of get the taxes out of the way now, let it grow tax-free, and then you can have access to it tax-free later.
Love
so
that.
Really cool instrument for that. And not to mention, first-time home purchase, qualified mm-hmm. educational purchases. There are other ways that you can access money. And you can even claw the principal back out of your Roth, because you've already paid taxes on it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just a tremendously useful tool. So the advice of just like, well, you know, just hit it up because the markets are down. Like, no, you are missing mm-hmm. the point of what the Roth can do.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it gave some other stuff as advice too, but I don't know. Do we need to take a break and come back to some of this, or do we got time for it, do you think?
Well, I mean, why don't you tell what let's lay one out there,
yeah.
And then what we'll do is what else did it recommend or
it
suggest?
It said, why don't you tilt towards lower, and this is during a downturn. It
yep.
said, tilt towards the lower beta, high quality companies with pricing power.
Okay.
And I get what it's saying, but I kind of have something that I'm thinking in the back of my mind where I'm like, but this.
I want to hear what you have to say. I think our listeners do too, but we should take that break. So
okay.
let's do it. We'll grab a break. When we come back, Matt, you're going to talk about this whole low beta thing, and we'll even explain what the heck that means, right? If you think it's like, what, you mean like before VHS? You're dating yourself. Don't worry, I know what you, I get it. I was right there with you. Now, we'll figure it out when we come back. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where when we last left, our heroes, right? That's me and Matt, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about how AI is... we went to AI and asked it, hey, markets are down, what should we do? And then it kind of gave some advice on how to, create a better or more robust... investment strategy.
Right. They wanted to be able to make it to where you're not really getting dinged too hard in a recession.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you do this? And it answered it. And then we looked at the answers and we said, it was kind of this,
Yeah.
And so we got to talk. Matt, you said something about beta.
Yeah.
Can you explain to me what you mean?
Yeah, so like if you were to look at maybe say an index of like 500 of the biggest companies in the United States, or any index really, right?
Okay.
And say, how does that market move? And then you were to compare an individual stock to that market,
mm-hmm.
we can start to talk about what beta means, right? And so if a company had a beta of like 0.5, you would assume that it would have about half the movement of the rest of the market as an index. That's kind of how I like to describe it.
All right. So the academic, as I understand it, is it is a measure of volatility compared to a benchmark.
Right.
We typically use the S&P 500 as the benchmark in the industry. And so the S&P benchmark is a beta of 1.
Right.
If the beta is lower than 1, then like at 0.5, that would mean half of the variability or volatility that the index has.
And so,
and if it's 2, the beta is 2, it's twice as volatile.
And so basically AI went in and said, why don't you get something that doesn't move quite as much as the market? But to me, I kind of slightly disagree with that a little bit, right?
Okay.
It depends on, did I already own it or am I?
Yeah.
Like when did
I? Yeah, I mean, I the concept of market timing is, you know, nearly impossible,
right,
to, at least to hit it spot on. And so it does seem a little counterintuitive, though, to say like, oh, the markets are down, why don't you switch to the things that don't move very much?
Right. And so that doesn't seem real.
Yeah, because it almost sounds like you're capturing the loss.
Exactly.
I mean, you're still owning stuff, but you're like, well, let's downshift while the markets are slow.
Right. Well, and to me, beta is only part of it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would rather focus personally on companies that maybe have like a better like rate of return based on how much volatility you're getting along the way. And we use things like the Sharpe ratio to try and give that a number.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking at like risk adjusted rate of returns. And so like how much risk am I taking for the return that I'm getting? And so I would rather maybe focus on that than just the beta, because I don't think that's a big enough piece of the puzzle.
There's a lot of things. And, you know, the study of investing has really evolved. Even over the last, you know, 2.5 decades of my career, I've watched where what we used to really talk about the basics of most of the returns from an individual stock came from the market segment that it was in. So they would say, well, the asset class made the determination. And originally asset classes were defined as the size of the company. So you had sort of small, medium, large, and were they growth companies or value companies?
Right.
And the growth companies were, you know, reinvesting the capital into themselves, and value companies maybe were more like, it's not this simple, but paying a dividend. There was really a price, it's book shares versus, you know, the price to book is what we call it. But since then, the market, we've really gotten way more granular with the way that we measure things. Markets have sort of exploded into the concept of factor investing. Beta is one of those factors. Value at risk. There's other versions of this that come into factor-based investing. And you're kind of talking about some of the factors here. And I think those are really relevant. The hard thing about factors, of course, is that just like other economic movements, factors come in and out of favor too. So sometimes a low beta strategy is very effective. Other times it's kind of laggy compared to the market.
Right. It just depends on where you're at. And so I don't think that you can necessarily like just pick something like that and say, well, this is the way for me to get the returns in a down market.
Yeah. So, all right, then if it's suggesting low beta, like what?
Well,
we're saying
it led into this next example that it wanted to talk about of like, hey, let me give you a real life example of how you might be able to spread out, say, like $1 million. And here's
what do you, when you say spread out $1 million,
so like
what do you
mean? If you have $1 million to invest, how could you move it around into different areas of the market?
Oh, like what would your theoretical allocation across the different?
Yeah, it tried to diversify and give you an example portfolio of how you could try and make it more resilient than maybe just the, because remember, it didn't like the 60-40 portfolio. It said 60% stocks and 40% bonds, not good enough.
Okay.
And so it wanted to try and diversify even further.
Okay,
and so
let's hear it.
It gave an example for you to think about, right? And so its example was, why don't you know you have roughly $100,000 of that million in something that's like a high yield or cash-like savings.
Okay.
And then it said maybe put $300,000 into either defensive or dividend stocks and bonds. So something that's paying an income.
Okay.
And then it said take another $300,000 and it tagged the Roth sleeve, right? Which
said,
we talked about earlier, where it's like, hey, it's tax-free growth. And it said, be aggressive, target more growth stocks with that. And then there was two more asset classes that it recommended. It said, why don't you put roughly $200,000 into either rentals or some sort of passive income,
okay,
and then the remaining $100,000 in stuff that's kind of flexible, and you can
or
just
tactical.
Kind of, yeah. So what's your take on all of this?
Let me pick this apart super fast.
Okay? Do it.
So first, it just said put 10% in an emergency fund.
Okay.
That's really the cash withdrawals, right?
Right.
Take $300,000 in defensive dividend stocks. Okay, that's and bonds. So those are income focused strategy.
Right.
$300,000 in growth and Roth investments. Okay, so first, Roth is not an investment category to me. It's a type of account.
Right.
So
yeah.
Like it's not even thinking properly there. What it's saying is that you should put growthy stuff in your Roth. Typically,
I think that's what it's trying to say.
But they're not the same thing. And so this is a case where the AI is sort of hallucinating a little bit, in my opinion.
Yep.
But you know what you're saying is, well, let's do about half in defensive stocks and half in growth stocks, and then the rest of it comes out of the market entirely and goes into unrelated asset classes. So when you get into things like rental real estate, that is a tangible asset and it's a different asset class that's designed to be lower correlation to the market.
Right.
Right. And it has different behaviors and tax treatments too.
Right.
So it's not crazy that it's suggesting that, but it is interesting that it's saying, well, if you had $1 million, I guess it's not saying get $1 million in the market. It's just saying you have $1 million.
I think its bigger point and the thing that it's really trying to focus on is how do we build something where if the market does drop 20 to 30%, you don't need to sell anything to fund your lifestyle. And I think that's what people really need to hone in on, focus.
And so how would, you know, maybe the better one is the discussion, and I may save this for a minute, but the discussion like, how would we answer the same question? So I want to finish picking this apart, but I do think there's kind of an approach to how you would solve this that's really different than what AI has approached.
I would love to hear your take on how you would go about this as someone who's been in the industry for a long time and isn't just thinking based on a language model.
Yeah, it's not just pulling from the, all right, well, you know what? We could actually do this. As I look at the clock, I know that this segment's maybe a tiny bit shorter, but if we do this, what we'll do, so let's do this. Let's grab a break now. Because what we can do then, we'll come back and Matt and I are going to unpack this concept of, okay, how might one go about designing a more robust, market downturn resistant portfolio, like if we were financial planning. So we're going to say, hey, we're walking through as if you were going to be a client. What would be the things that we would ask and how would you go about designing a strategy that would help you weather market storms?
I like that.
All right, let's do it. But we're going to take a break first. So stick around. We'll be right back. Until then, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
I'm Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where I, David Littlejohn, am hosting along with
Matt Dixon.
Who, Matt, thanks for being the brains of the operation here.
Yep, no problem.
I love the question that you have asked today. You know, you asked AI some questions, how we use, and then this last one was really fun. So catch our listeners up if they're just joining us on like why, what you did and how we got here.
So basically I asked AI to build me a recession-proof retirement account, right? Like how do I allocate my money in different areas? Where do I put stuff so that if the market pulls back 20%, I don't even care, right? Like I might care, but I'm not gonna feel it to the point to where I am stressed and under duress.
Okay.
So I ask it these questions. It gave us some good stuff, but it also gave us some garbage.
Okay. Can you give me like the super high level? What's some stuff it got right and what's some stuff it got wrong? Just kind of.
I think the good stuff was, you know, volatility can be potentially more dangerous during the retirement years than when you're accumulating, right?
Certainly during distribution time.
Right.
You're taking money out. Volatility is not your friend.
Right. And the just ride it out theory doesn't always work if you're having to take money out all the time during a down market that extends for a long period of time.
Okay.
The things that I think it got wrong maybe is just saying use your Roth IRA as a shock absorber.
It's we don't like that.
Listen to
the prior segment if you want to hear why.
And then it said just buy the low beta stocks, but it you know, you got to realize that that's not just a foolproof strategy, yeah. right? Sometimes leaning into those companies that tend to average, you know, higher returns, especially when they're already beat up 30-40%, that can be effective at times. So I think it really depends on where you're at in the market cycle.
Okay.
And how much volatility, we talked about volatility,
right.
how much can you withstand, how much can you stomach, versus also what do you need to make your lifestyle function,
right?
Because if you have a ton of assets, you actually might afford to be able to be more aggressive mm-hmm. because you're never gonna actually outspend the money that's in your account.
Yes.
Right, so it's very, very dependent. But what AI did is, and we talked about this right before we went on break, how can we take $1 million portfolio in theory and then break that apart into either different asset classes or different, you know, kind of buckets, even though you hate this term?
I can work with it.
Okay, so how do we maybe move money around to create a portfolio that is insulated from big market turndowns? That's the key.
Right. And so when we looked at this example, and what I wanted to do was, we kind of picked it apart in the last segment, but it's like, well, how might we propose that you solve this?
Sure.
Now, the first thing I'm going to say is,
we can't give investment advice.
Yeah, we can't give you direct investment advice. So instead, what I'm going to do is walk you through sort of philosophically how we would approach this solve, because this is how we would customize a strategy for an investor too, right. a little bit. The first thing is, you're doing some reverse engineering, right? Mm-hmm. You hit the nail on the head, Matt, when you said, how much does somebody need for their lifestyle?
Yeah.
Okay. And if your lifestyle can be sustained by pension income and Social Security, you're a pretty good spot, because what you have is the risk management is somebody else's problem. Mm-hmm. Right? The pensions are expected to actuarially manage to make sure they can make those payments, and Social Security is backstopped by the taxpayer.
Right.
So that puts you in a pretty enviable spot. Great, I don't have to take money from my investments, yeah. so I can afford to just wait for a better time if the markets are down.
Right.
Right? So I've literally bought time. We talked about how having an emergency or savings reserve, this is the same as the short-term bucket, by the way.
Yeah.
What that does is, you can take from that, and it's not very volatile, right? There's not big swings up and down. So taking right. from that bucket doesn't trigger a loss, and therefore it buys you the time to let your other longer term investments recover.
Yeah.
So that's the next thing, is we're staging in, how much do you have in some kind of third party risk managed income streams, right?
Right?
Right? Pensions and Social Security, versus how much are you self-managing the risk? And so first, that first bucket is the shock absorber, right? That's yeah. not your Roth account, that's your shock absorber. And then you get into, the rest of it was portfolio design, right? So the portfolio design is gonna be things that are highly liquid versus things that are less highly liquid, okay? Things that are highly liquid include market instruments and banking instruments. Things that are less liquid are gonna be things like real estate and things like privately held businesses.
Yeah, I think that's okay. a big misconception. Everyone thinks that real estate is just super liquid, right? But like you said, it's not as liquid as something like a stock where you can just click a button
yeah.
and it's sold.
It's not then, readily liquid. They can yeah. be liquidated, but it right. still takes time.
It takes time.
And so you need yeah. other monies in order to sort of exist on those right. until the transaction yeah. is facilitated. So yeah, it's not that straightforward. Now, why do we like things like businesses and real estate? Because guess what? Real estate's a business, right? If you own a rental property, you actually own a business.
Right.
What it has is cash flow, mm-hmm. and it has expenses and income, and it has depreciation. Those are all different components that you get to manage within that little business ecosystem. And then you pair those elements up with the rest of your financial circumstance.
Right.
And so if you have lots of rentals, then you have lots of moving parts, but they're all pretty similar. They're expenses for operation, they're cash flow income from the rents,
yeah.
and then there's depreciation for the asset, right? And so then that maintenance is an expense, right? That's how those things basically work. Small businesses are a little bit different. Really, it's just how much time and effort you have to put into them, though. Like, yeah. you know, that's how passive or not. Getting a dividend from a stock is super passive, right? I bought it and I sit back and wait for the check to show up.
Yeah.
It's not the same as being a landlord, where you maybe are not on the clock the same way, but any landlord would tell you there's still work,
mm-hmm.
right? So, but they are different parts of your financial strategy, right? There's tax treatment and cash flow, and there's an asset value. a liquidatable asset value at that. So if you needed to sell the house to pull cash out, it's available, right?
Yeah.
And real estate's attractive for lots of reasons. But when I'm looking at this portfolio, what I saw AI do was it basically said, kind of mix together some high risk and low risk investments, and then add in some passive real estate,
some cash,
and some cash on the side so that you can weather the storm. And, you know, and that's pretty basic advice.
Right.
What we would do is say, well, for the highly liquid stuff, you're going to look at the tax treatment, and then you're going to look at what are the liquidity needs that you have, and then how much time can you buy for the markets to fluctuate, if you will. And that's really the magic. It's like you've reverse engineered to, and risk tolerance is part of it, right? But there's how much risk are you willing to take, and how much do you have to take?
That's a very different question.
Right? They're not the same answer, are they?
No.
But that's how we would deconstruct this, is how much risk must you take? How much are you willing to take? How much cash reserves can you afford to, you know, how much time can you afford to buy? And then how many non-risk assets do you have? And that's what those pensions really are. Is like, it's not that they're zero risk, but they're very low risk because theoretically you're not responsible for the risk management, right? And then you just assemble those to make sure that the cash flows match up. And I kind of neglected one part too. You can design investments to throw off cash.
Mm-hmm.
And if the cash they throw off in the form of dividend and interest payments is suitable to meet your income needs, you don't have to sell them.
Yeah.
Right? As long as a company isn't cutting its dividend, you can afford to let the stock price fluctuate as long as the dividend is adequate to meet your income needs.
What would you say to the person who's listening to this right now and is like, well, I don't really know if my portfolio is set up in a way that kind of aligns with what you guys are talking about, or I feel like maybe my portfolio could be diversified better? You know, like, how do they seek clarification on that? What do they do?
Yeah, I mean, there's really tons of ways to do it. The layup for our firm is to say, well, you call us, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the layup, is to say, we're in the business of doing this for people. It's why we offer the free consult, is to have an opportunity to speak with somebody. If you just want a second opinion, you know, we've got a lot of tools and resources that we can.
Well, and sometimes the answer is, hey, it is really well diversified.
Yeah.
You're set up great, and you like the person you're working with, or you're really smart and you're doing it yourself. Like, that's okay too.
Yeah, and we do tell people that.
Yeah.
Right? It's hiring a financial advisor is, it's important when you won't do it. Right? Or if you're not doing it well.
Yeah.
If you're not doing it well, or you won't do it. But it's kind of like yard maintenance in some respects. Like, once you learn how to do it, you can do it. I don't think that we're like way smarter than our customers. I don't think that's what's going on. I think we're way specialized, and we have all of the tools at our disposal, and this is what we do all the time.
Yeah.
So we should be decent at it. But it's not because they're idiots and we're not. That is not how that works.
Well, if they want to contact us, do you want to give them some info on how to do that?
So, sure. So there's lots of ways that you can engage with our firm, right? You can go to our website. It's littlejohnfs.com. And, you know, there's the chat bot. You can call us. You can text us on the office line, too. So we'll get those. You can send us an email. It's info@littlejohnfs.com. So there's all these different ways that you can just kind of get a foot in the door with the ecosystem. If you want to go, we have an online scheduler if you just want to schedule an appointment. But, you know, at the end of the day, our goal is to help. You know, if it's not with us, there's tons of online tools. There's other advisors out there that are great. So we're not here to, but if you don't know where to turn, like, hey, we're happy to help get you pointed in the right direction. And maybe it's us.
Yeah, I think the big takeaway is indecision is still a decision, right? Like, if you hear this and you're like, well, I know I need to do something, but you don't do anything, you're still making a decision.
Yeah, decision is still a decision.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the key on this one is just take the next step. If you're uncomfortable with what you're doing, you know, get more information, right? Listen to more of our podcast.
Get a second opinion, a third opinion. Like, go out there and look.
Exactly.
Research it.
What I can tell you is it's within your grasp, right? This material is available. It's learnable. You can do it. And if we can come alongside you, we're happy to do that.
I like it.
Cool. Well, look, I'm looking at the clock and I realize time does fly when you're having fun.
Exactly.
Good
cool.
deal. Well, thank you, AI, for giving us an attempt, and also for the opportunity to maybe poke a few holes too.
I like it.
Good deal. All right. Well, that's the clock. So I guess it's a wrap. Time to run, huh?
Yep.